fighting for America.
Mr. President, if you don't want to give terrorists a recruitment tool, instead of closing Guantanamo Bay, frankly, sir, you ought to close your mouth. They called us crusaders, and you've just confirmed it.
Fighting for Idaho.
The situation with the underpass that you're talking about, it's a microcosm of a larger issue, and because it's such a high-profile area, I think people focus on it a little more than the overall situation warrants.
Fighting for you.
Remember those creepy King ads they did?
The King!
The King.
They were so creepy,
they
though.
Were so creepy.
I thought they were good after a while, though. Here comes really, the King. He's going to get you.
Boise's Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the Morning, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
And good morning. Thank you all for joining us. Here we are, striving, grinding it out, living the dream each and every weekday from 5 to 9, all the time at 580kido.com. We have the hot list. We'd love for you to check that out. Give us a click. That'll show our folks here and across America that our existence is justified. We're always working to create content, whether it's here, online, or everywhere at 580kido with Kevin Miller. So check out the hot list, some good stories. And some remarks, actually, quite funny sound clips that we're throwing on there, and we're trying to expand that as we move on to give you a greater variety to take a look at things. Joining us now, though, is the executive director of the Idaho Meth Project, Adrian Cavender, with us. Adrian, good morning.
Good morning.
You know, we see your ads all the time, and we see the billboards, and they're quite shocking. And I thought to myself, since meth and drugs and big story on Channel 7 about heroin are such relevant stories to us, I figured it would be great to talk to you about what really goes on with the meth project and just how big of an issue meth is here in the state of Idaho. So I guess if we could start an overview, a lot of us live in great homes. We have low crime here. But is there an undercurrent of activity that makes the Idaho meth project relevant?
Absolutely. I think people kind of they see that since our inception in 2008, meth use has gone down about 56%, 57%, which is awesome. I mean, we love that. However, what we see is that almost a quarter of teens still don't see great risk in trying meth. We know that through a recent survey that we did, that over half of Idaho teens think that they could get meth if they wanted it. And the scary thing, because I have a 7-year-old, this is something that, you know, is coming up in our household. I have a 7-year-old stepson. 1 in 4 Idaho teens think that they can get meth from a friend. And so one of the things that I always try to tell parents is if you're not talking to your teens about meth, someone else is. And we want to make sure that those conversations are happening in the living rooms and over the dinner tables of everyday Idahoans.
Well, here's the skinny on this, and you've heard this whether you live in Meridian or Napa or Boise or Notice, wherever, people are going to say, well, not my kid.
Of course. Of course not your kid. And I hope not your kid. But what I would tell you as somebody who works in this space every day is there is no quote-unquote face of meth. There is no typical meth user. We have individuals that work with us every day, and almost all of them start with the conversation or start with the sentence, you know, I come from a good home. Both my parents are still married. I was taught better. And so what I would tell you is even if you don't think it's your kid, still talk to your kids about methamphetamine, about some of the harder drugs, because the good news is that most Idaho parents are talking to their kids about drugs. That's fantastic news. The problem is that most of those conversations are centered around either alcohol or marijuana, which is fantastic. We want you to talk to your kids about substance abuse in general. But what I would say is while you're talking to your kids about, you know, the dangers of alcohol, the dangers of marijuana, also talk to them about the dangers of methamphetamine, about heroin, about prescription drugs.
Well, and, you know, we've had the big story of Breaking Bad, how it's romanticized the meth industry.
Mm-hmm.
What's the allure for kids to do the meth? Because to me, whether you're sticking yourself or smoking it, it doesn't seem very appealing. I mean, but to me, three cheeseburgers is appealing, and a lot of people would have issues with that.
Well, unfortunately, there's a lot of reasons why students decide to do methamphetamine, whether it's, the need to stay up. Again, in this recent poll, we find that, a lot of the more common effects of using meth aren't really believed, that they're myths. For instance, almost 35% of Idaho teens think that meth helps you lose weight. And that's not true. It just eats your muscle. And so it makes you look gaunt, but it actually doesn't help you lose weight. And so our job is to make sure that we get out there and we make sure that teens know that that's why we spread our not even once message. A lot of teens don't find a risk in doing meth. And the fact of the matter is that 90% of those that try it for the first time will be addicted. And that's scary. And that's why it's the not even once. Don't even pick it up, not even once.
Adrian Kavaner with us from the Idaho Meth Project, the executive director. Kevin Miller in the Morning, 580 KIDO. So you've got these ads that are pretty shocking that get a lot of attention. What's the purpose of those ads?
Well, we find it twofold. Number one, when we started in 2006 or 2007, and we launched our first ad in 2008. The governor and the first lady saw that methamphetamine was really eating away Idaho families from the inside out, that methamphetamine is a particularly insidious drug that takes a hold of people and doesn't let go. And so when we started in 2007 and again launched in 2008, we used them as an education tool. A lot of people hadn't heard of meth, and now it's educating an entirely new generation of students coming up through the ranks. And I think also what we have found too, and what we've heard from parents throughout the state of Idaho, is that it really serves as a catalyst for conversations. And we know that parents have a tremendous influence in their teens' life. Even if they don't think that, teens consistently rank parents as one of the main influencers in their lives. And so what we have found is that our ads, whether it's our billboard ads or our radio ads, serve as that beginning of that conversation and a way to kind of open that door to talk about meth.
What about adults? What's the issue there? We've talked to a lot of folks, our friends at the Boise Rescue Mission and other nonprofits that deal with recovering addicts. How big of an issue is it for adults here in the Treasure Valley?
Like I said, meth is a particularly insidious drug, and it's one of the hardest to kick once we have it. And that's why a lot of people ask us, what about recovery? And we say the very nature of the drug necessitates a prevention campaign because it is so hard to kick once you're on it. The great news is there's resources out there for individuals, and I would tell people to call, and I know that it sounds simple, Kevin, but call the 211 line, and they will hook you up with resources that are in your area that are available through the state or private entities.
580 KIDO, as we continue on. Now, are people still cooking meth in their house?
Well, that's a bright spot that we've seen the number of homegrown meth labs really decrease. And that has to do with a lot of the policies that have happened around methamphetamine. For instance, putting a pseudoephedrine behind the counter, it's just very hard to cook. The problem with that is that now that we haven't homegrown it, we're now importing it. The I-84 corridor, according to the DEA, is one of the major trafficking centers of methamphetamine through the United States. And to give you some perspective, Kevin, we know that there is approximately about 500 pounds of methamphetamine trafficked through the state of Idaho every month. To put that again into a little bit of perspective, a Splenda packet, if you think of a Splenda packet, is 2 grams. There are 28 grams in an ounce, 16 ounces in a pound. So you can do the math on that, right?
You can take my word for it. I can do the math on it. Yes.
Yeah. Exactly. It's a lot. Let's just say it's a lot.
Sure.
That Splenda packet for the new meth user is approximately 20 hits of meth. That's enough. So, if again, Kevin, doing the math on it. That is enough meth to get every man, woman, and child high in the state of Idaho every month.
Wow.
Yeah. So, it's again, the really great news is that we're not – the amount of meth houses in the state of Idaho has just drastically decreased. Again, the problem is that we're importing it. So, again, if you're not talking to your kids about meth, someone else is.
What about the violence associated with the drug trade? Mm. Again, in Idaho, we don't have a lot of traffic. The news stories are about a new traffic light, thankfully. Mm. But you talk to law enforcement, and they say there's a drug subculture here.
Absolutely, absolutely. We hear stories every day of individuals that are not only users that are being violent, but you know, innocent people that are being victimized every day because of methamphetamine. One of the things that we hear, unfortunately, from individuals kind of on the street is that we sensationalize the drug world, that we make it worse than it actually is. There's no way that the drug culture in Idaho could possibly look like what we make it out to look like, right? And what we hear from our volunteers every day is that we don't sensationalize it one single bit. That's exactly what the drug culture looks like every day in the state of Idaho.
Well, everybody thinks that there's a code of honor among the drug dealers.
Sorry.
I mean, look, I watched Breaking Bad.
Sure. I don't mean to be flippant. I apologize. One of the things that we tell students every day is that drug dealers lie. Drug dealers lie. And because they are capitalists, and if they can get an individual hooked, that means that they have a customer for life. And we know of people that have that buy meth, that have in the past bought meth to put on marijuana. Because if you can make that marijuana more addictive, you have a customer for life. And that's one of the things that we tell students every day is let's pretend that you have the one drug dealer with moral scruples in the state of Idaho. Let's just say that your guy is the one guy who is honest. The problem with that is you don't. What about his dealer? And what about their dealer? That little bag of methamphetamine has traded hands probably 5 to 6 times. So even if you have a very honest drug dealer, which is not likely. We certainly haven't found one,
right?
Since 2007 when we started. But if you have, can you trust, you know, every hand that's touched that bag? And I would submit to you that you can't.
Right. Again, the danger that that meth produces. What about Breaking Bad? What influence has that had on the anti-meth campaign?
Right. Well, it's kind of twofold. Honestly, we think that a lot of more people are talking about methamphetamine. It's certainly at the forefront of people's mind because of it. I also think, though, that the idea that it glorifies meth or makes it not as bad it has some foundation as well. One of the things that I find, and this is just me personally, especially in the Jesse character, is that Jesse tends to go on meth and then not on meth, and then he's on meth and then he gets clean and then he slips out and then he gets, and that's certainly not what we have found. We have found that once you are on meth, it's very, very difficult to get off, and it doesn't. Breaking Bad didn't show the physicality of methamphetamine addiction, the gauntness and the scabs and the meth mites and the shadow people and all of that. I watched the entire series. There's really only one episode that really showed that, and then the rest of it kind of glossed right over it.
And which episode was that?
The one where Walter White goes to the meth house to find Jesse.
Mm-hmm.
And walks kind of through the, and that seems to probably get as close as they get, to, you know, throughout the whole thing. But even then, I don't think that it really encapsulates, you know, what the drug world looks like. But Breaking Bad's job is not to inform us; it's to entertain us, right? And that's our job here at the Idaho Meth Project is not to entertain people; it's to inform them.
A final thought here.
Yeah.
How concerned is the governor and the first lady about this issue in Idaho?
Well, they're the ones who started this whole thing. They're the ones who saw the problem in Idaho and then brought the Idaho Meth Project to Idaho. It started in Montana by Tom Siebel and his foundation, because Montana also has a significant meth problem. And the governor and the first lady saw what they were doing in Montana, saw their results, and said, we need that in Idaho, and brought that to Idaho and single-handedly started the meth project from there with help from a lot of their good friends. But they're the ones that really had the vision, and I think that they have a lot of the credit to show for our 56% decline in the state of Idaho.
Adrian, if people want more information, if they have a question, maybe they're worried about their kids or a coworker, what can they do?
Well, always go to our website at idahomethproject.org. There are a lot of resources there. If you need additional resources, our telephone number is on that website.
And it's that big of an issue, more than just the TV ads.
Absolutely. We're in schools. We are in, we do community outreach. A lot of people ask us, you know, I don't see you on television anymore. And a lot of our ads have moved digital. And so if you haven't seen them, it's probably because we're not targeting you. We are looking at really reaching teenagers where they're at, and that's on their screens. And so we are out there educating as much as we can. But again, like I said, nobody has influence in their lives more than parents. So talk to your kids about methamphetamine.
Adrian, we appreciate it. We'd love to have you back.
Oh, I would love to be back.
Take care.
You too.
All right. Bye-bye. There we have it. A relevant message, and this is something that I've been looking at for years. We've talked about it for years, these ads. And you know, we decided to do a little investigation myself and the political correspondent and find out, you know, just what really goes on. But you have the meth project going to schools. You have the meth project on the streets. And that's really where you're going to change the hearts and minds. So good luck to that.
Getting more done before sunrise than anyone. Kevin Miller in the morning on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO. We go to Fox News Radio for our friend John Decker. Mr. Decker, good morning.
Hey, good morning to you, Kevin. How are you?
Well, living the dream, and always a pleasure to have you on talking about politics and 2016, and it looks like the Republicans are ready to go with the new political director.
Yeah, so the RNC has tapped Chris Carr as their new political director. This is for the 2016 election cycle. He's returning to the RNC. He formerly served in the position of a regional political director for the western states, so he's perhaps familiar with Idaho. And he is someone who they believe will help them in a very important aspect of presidential elections, and that is the ground game, getting out the vote on election day. That's how Democrats won in both 2008 and 2012, and Republicans are trying to turn things around for the 2016 election cycle.
You know, John, you take a look at the ground game, and when we think about this, it wasn't only the ground game. They mastered the Rove playbook, but they also mastered the social media, social engagement game, which, you know, was kind of like air support to their superior ground game. Hopefully this new selection, Western influence and all, will be able to help.
No, that you're absolutely right. This was critical to President Obama in both of his winning presidential elections. Social media is one aspect of it, and also just all the technology that's involved in getting out the vote. That's where Democrats beat Republicans. It wasn't just, you know, obviously from the big picture, the Electoral College. If you dig down deep, it was social media. It was getting folks out there. It was analyzing data, and that's the job that Chris Carr will have for 2016. He's got a tough job ahead of him, but the Republicans believe they have, you know, some momentum after winning back the Senate in 2014, having a very successful election cycle in the midterms in 2014.
Well, John, it couldn't get much worse for them when we're talking technology. You know, I can't remember, it wasn't the War Room, it was something, one of these books written about it, where actually the Democrats had the best and brightest from Google and Facebook, and they kept attacking their app or whatever it was, whatever they called it, to make sure that it was ready to go on game day. the Republicans, the Romney campaign, had this thing called Merlin, and it crashed on Election Day, and there was no way to recover it. And it just shows you not only boots on the ground, but apps and social media are going to play a more crucial part of this election. You have to wonder if Mr. Carr is going to have an issue when we're talking about just the amount of candidates so far, never mind the general election.
Yeah, there are a number of Republicans who've indicated that they're going to run for the Republican nomination in 2016. You know the names. Chris Christie's one of them. Jeb Bush is another. Rand Paul's another. And I think that when all is said and done, you'll probably have about 8 to 10 well-known Republicans, a lot of sitting governors running for the Republican nomination. And Republicans believe they have a very strong field for 2016 to go up against who will likely be the Democratic nominee, Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, you talk about a contrast. You don't know if the field's going to be too big, too deep, and whether or not that will hurt or help Madam Clinton, because she might not have any competition which would, you know, help her get off the ring rust, if you will.
You know, that's a very good point. You know, it's often said that, you know, Hillary Clinton made Barack Obama a much stronger candidate in 2008, and I think there's something to that. I think that you need to go through the process of sort of trial by fire in the primaries in order to sort of get yourself ready for what will be a very tough race against your opponent in the general election. So I don't think that Mrs. Clinton is necessarily doing herself any favors, or the Democratic Party is doing itself any favors, by just having one candidate, you know, in there running for the Democratic nomination. That's Hillary Clinton. There's some other names that have been mentioned that may consider running for the Democratic nomination, but nowhere near having the star power of Hillary Clinton or the fundraising power of Hillary Clinton also.
John, we appreciate it. Hope to hear from you again.
Absolutely, Kevin. Have a great day, okay?
You too.
Thank you.
You're listening to Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO.
Treasure Valley's exclusive home for Kevin Miller. KIDOAM.com. 580 KIDO. Idaho's place to talk.
Good morning, Kevin Miller in the morning. It is the Manly Man Show, the pre-show, if you will, the pre-kind of pre-post in-between show, between the opening of the show and the rest of the show.
What
it's
does
all
that
about
mean?
The show.
I got confused.
I was going to say it's the pre-show, but we already have a pre-show, which is the half hour that precedes the Manly Man Show.
Oh. So
I'm just kind of, trying to move on my feet here with Dave Burnett at 580 KIDO. Before we get to some of the big stories of the day, this is something that you and I have been talking about off the air for quite some time, and I want you to do, maybe we should have this as a regular feature, and it's the Dave Burnett movie review.
The Dave Burnett movie review?
Yeah, during the Manly Man segment.
Yeah, finally, last week, I saw American Sniper. I've been forever trying to get to it and just haven't had time. And very good movie, very well done. Michael Moore, go away, your whole complaint thing, but done very well. And the end of the movie is just very impactful, the way they close it out. And I know it's been out for, a month now? Still don't want to run it for anyone who hasn't seen it yet, how the whole thing ends. But
I think everybody knows how it ends.
Well, no, not exactly the movie and how the movie closes out.
Hmm.
You know, as they do credits and things. But, yeah, very moving. But, Clint Eastwood did a very good job of capturing the agony that it must feel for somebody who's gone through that. And I'm not talking just a sniper, because there's anyone who's been in war and been in combat has had to make decisions that here, walking the streets of America, you probably wouldn't make the same decisions. But when it's life or death, you do what you got to do. And I think he did a pretty good job of showing the agonizing decisions that have to be made. And just the whole fear and the whole thing that goes with war.
Well, how emotional did you get?
It's the big knot in the throat at the end of the thing. It was like, oh, look, there's dust in my eye. It's very dusty in this theater. So I did that. And also last week had a chance to see the movie Black or White, the Kevin Costner movie, which dealt with the issue of race and dealt with it very bluntly, I must say, to which I'm surprised Kevin Costner didn't personally get in trouble for some of the things said, some of the lines said, some of the approach, but done very well. So I was very happy with both.
Well, you're gonna have to expand on that though. What's the plot?
Well, the plot of Black or White is that there's a gal that was involved in a mixed race relation when she was 17, got pregnant, daughter dies in childbirth. Grandparents, Kevin Costner and his wife, are raising this mixed race child, and then Kevin Costner's wife dies. And so he's left to raise this little girl alone. And so then the dad's family comes back and they want her. They want her. They want her raised in their culture, their society, not in his. So it's kind of the battle back and forth between those. And, you know, they wind up in court. But, I mean, you know, one statement that was made in the court scenes is the fact that, you know, everyone notices people's race. When you see somebody, you notice, you know, you're black, you're white, you're Asian, you're Hispanic, you're this, you're that. And that's not what makes you racist, because you notice somebody's color or race. It's the second, third thoughts that come through your mind. That's where the racism comes in. And it's very true. You know, so that was a very powerful movie. Very good.
Well, you know, the inside skinny on that is that nobody believed in the movie, and they didn't want that movie done. So Costner funded it himself.
Yeah, well, I'm sure they didn't. I'm sure they didn't on all sides. Everybody, you know, I mean, it's one of those things that race is an issue. It does exist, but should be spoken of openly and talked about. And that, you know, when it's talked about openly, it diffuses a lot of the tensions and problems that we have.
Well, I think the racial problems in America are not that they don't exist, which I've said before, but I think they're ginned up by the media, by the agitators, by the Sharptons, by the Jacksons, and by others. There are far more stories of, you know, as Kevin Costner, and I haven't seen the movie, but of this unconditional love that this grandfather has for his granddaughter,
mm-hmm.
That go on in our society today that are unreported. You know, we talk about Gabby Douglas Davis, the gymnast, mm-hmm. who won a gold medal, and what went into that. We talk about people that, you know, Coach Jonathan Coachman from ESPN, he's a black guy. He was raised by a white family. I mean, to me, those are such wins for our society. The president himself, who was raised by his grandparents, who Hawaii is a different universe than the rest of us. But, I mean, unconditional love right there couldn't have been easy.
Mm-hmm. No, you know, so a very good movie with a very good message, and I'm sure I could see why people wanted to stay away from it. But the truth is, I mean, and you're right, the media gins things up. I mean, Ferguson, Missouri, I was listening to George Norrie. Somebody was getting all about that the other day, and George Norrie on Coast to Coast Overnight, who works out of St. Louis a lot of the time, says Ferguson's a very tiny area, and where the problem was is a street. But if you watch the national news, you would think the entire city was burning down. And it wasn't the case. It was a street, but the media wanted to make it a lot bigger issue than it was.
Well, and I think that there is a double standard, though, with the media when you have white-on-black crime, it's hyped up. And when it's the other way around, it's downplayed for some mm-hmm. reason.
Yeah.
And look, we're not saying that anybody's entirely innocent. We all have our prejudices. But when we don't address them, you know, we have issues that continue to reoccur. I go back to this Costner movie, and I think that that is the real story of race in America today. And, you know, everybody wants to give us a hard time, but look at you go back to the 60s and the movie Selma or I'm the Butler or whatever, and how far the society has become, where you have people saying, well, I want Spider-Man to be black now. I want this person to be black. Larry King's son wants to be black. It shows you just how colorblind we are as a society. You take a look at all the entertainers. You know, if we were racist, Barack Obama would not be president.
That is true. Now, does racism exist? Absolutely it does. In both directions.
Yeah, and whether it's through information, entertainment, education, I just don't like the incredible double standard. Hey, we have too many white guys. We have too many this. And you can't say that about any other racial class. It's just strange. It's unfortunate, and thankfully, I'm glad that Kevin Costner made this movie.
Yeah, and done very well. Is it uncomfortable in some scenes? Yeah, it does get uncomfortable in some scenes.
Well, you know, it's kind of weird because Costner, he's got another movie coming out where he apparently is a track coach.
Mm-hmm. McFarland.
For a bunch of Latino kids.
Yeah, and based off a true story.
My favorite line in that movie, just from the trailer, is when he's sitting there eating and he doesn't want anything and the grandmother yells at him.
Yeah. You're going to be part of this family. You're going to eat that.
Right, and... Those are two must-see movies you would recommend?
It depends if you're a theater person or not, but I would say definitely, you know, when they come out on video to watch them.
Well, I have to tell you, I've become a fan of the new AMC series, Better Call Saul.
Better Call Saul.
It's brilliantly written from the creator of Breaking Bad.
Mm-hmm.
And the first two episodes came out really good.
I have not seen it. I've seen the promos for it.
Very dark. Very dark. Just like Breaking Bad.
Yeah, which was dark.
And let's continue on before we get to Brian Williams and John Stewart, because everybody's talking about them. Mm-hmm. Why should we talk about what everybody's talking about? But, we had Adrian Cavender from the Meth Project on yesterday. And mm-hmm. I've heard this from a lot of folks in law enforcement. The issue involving Breaking Bad and their portrayal of the meth business, and people are going to say, well, Kevin, Dave, it's just a TV show. But, I mean, that was a cultural event, that show.
Yeah, I mean, there's an upside and there is a downside, you know, to whether it's glamorized, whether it's not, whether it takes a realistic look or whether it doesn't. Like anything on TV, nothing's a realistic look. I mean, really, honestly, is there anything really on TV that's a realistic look? Not very often, because if it's realistic, it's really going to be boring.
Survivor.
No.
That's reality TV, right?
Yeah, it is.
I'm trying to think of anything that is real on TV. Oh, Brian Williams? Oh.
No. I mean, there's not. I mean, look at a cop show. If cops really had to go through everything they have on cop shows, it would kill them. I mean, you talk to any patrol officer. Most of being a patrol officer is pretty doggone boring.
24.
24. Yeah, no. I mean, if anything was realistic, it would be boring. It wouldn't be a TV show.
Well, let's get to Brian Williams.
That's boring.
Suspended for 6 months without pay, so he's only going to make $5 million a year. Only $5 million a year.
I hope we can live on that. We might want to put together a fundraiser.
I don't know, the nepotism involved at NBC kind of gets to me. And you mentioned this yesterday, and I saw the report where Brian Williams is talking about his daughter and everything, and then he interviews her for the live Peter Pan special. Couldn't we get somebody else besides Brian Williams' daughter to do this? And do we have to have Brian Williams interview his own daughter? I mean, to me, isn't that, you know, how big of a rub do you have to get at the network's expenses, if you will?
Well, you're at the top of the heap. You'd think you could, you know, do better than that.
You know, at least have Lester Holt, who will be taking his place. I think that's a good choice. Do it, or somebody else.
Yeah. I just the whole thing with Brian Williams, and then I find out, and I was not aware of the fact, you know, his story in Iraq, and maybe you were aware of this, and the helicopter that came under fire, he wasn't even anywhere near it. It was 90 minutes behind that helicopter that came under attack.
Yeah, it's kind of like what the guy said. He goes, dude, I remember you coming up and saying an hour later, what happened, buddy?
Yeah. So, I mean, wow, that's really misread. That's not even kind of blurring the facts. That's just making it up as you go. And
well,
I guess that's why he's gone.
And when you hear this, now, let's quickly, Sweet William, do we have this? Yes, we do. Okay, let's go to the pilot who defended Brian Williams. Well, maybe
I thought that Sweet William said it was ready.
Well, you know,
he's not doing his job.
We can't blame William. It's the computer, apparently. That's what he's telling me.
Of course it is.
Okay, let's try it. What do we have here? One more time here. Do we have it, William? You're making me look bad. I'm trying to defend you. Yeah, here is the pilot defending Brian Williams.
No, as far as I know, we didn't take any fire. Nothing was fired at us.
All right.
I thought he was defending
his position in the back of the aircraft. I'm not even sure if he was up on headsets, but if he was, he could have heard the calls over guard, thought it was us, or I really don't know. I'm not Mr. Williams, but What I can say is, being on the aircraft, one of three pilots that were on that aircraft, we did not take any fire.
Well, thank you, William, for that one. Apparently, yesterday, there was a pilot that said they did take fire on that aircraft. But quickly now, one more time with Brian Williams.
We're up in an Israeli military Black Hawk helicopter. Here's a view of rockets I'd never seen passing underneath us, 1,500 feet beneath us, you know, and we've got the gunner doors on this thing. And I'm
so you get the point. I mean, that's a long way from a chopper was shot at an hour before I got there routine.
Wow.
Yeah, it goes on into vivid detail here.
That's amazing. And then quickly before I do traffic, John Stewart's hanging them up.
Yeah, imagine that.
Guess he's going to take the cash and run.
Join us tomorrow night, 11. Now, I would imagine as this show is airing.
All right, so you know he's leaving. What do you make of that?
Conservatives ought to be happy, but let's see what happens.
Hmm.
That's just my thought. Traffic now, Kevin, as you're coming out of Candy County.
I'm back. Weekdays at 9. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
5:58, if you haven't heard and you're a big fan of The Daily Show, Jon Stewart had a big announcement last night.
There may be information out there right now that the audience might not be aware of. So I will just tell you, Doug Herzog, Michelle Gainless of Comedy Central, gave me an incredible opportunity 17 years ago to pilot this wonderful franchise. And 17 years is the longest I have ever in my life held a job by 16 years and 5 months. Thank you. The upshot there being, I am a terrible employee. But in my heart, I know it is time for someone else to have that opportunity. And that I told you they didn't know. You probably know.
There you have it. More on that in a minute. Time for traffic. Now, up next, Brian Williams gets suspended with pay. Should he? Or perhaps he should just say, I'm sorry.
KIDO, Idaho.